Chapter 9. The tremors increased with terrifying swiftness. A distant rumbling seemed to move closer. Then came sharp thumping sounds as small rocks tumbled down the canyon slopes and struck against the suboceanic buildings. Everyone kept glancing up at the great arched roof of the equipment chamber, fearful of an avalanche breaching the walls. One tiny opening and the water would burst inside with the shattering power of 1,000 cannons. All was calm, no panic. Except for the clothes they wore, nothing was carried but the computer records of the project. 8 minutes was all it took for the crew to assemble and ready the deep-sea vehicles for boarding. Pitt had known instantly that a few must die. The two-manned submersibles were each designed to carry a maximum of 6 people. 7 might be crammed on board for a total of 14, the exact number of the project team, but certainly no more. Now they were burdened with the unplanned presence of the crewmen from Old Gert. The shocks were coming stronger and closer together now. Pitt saw no chance of a sub reaching the surface, unloading survivors, and returning in time to rescue those left behind. The round trip took no less than 4 hours. The suboceanic structures were slowly weakening under the increasing shocks, and it was only a question of minutes before they would give way and be crushed by the onslaught of the sea. Giordino read the dire signs in the fixed expression on Pitt's face. "We'll have to make 2 trips. Better I wait for the next." "Sorry, old pal," Pitt cut him off. "You pilot the first sub. I'll follow in the second. Get to the surface, unload your passengers into inflatable rafts, and dive like hell for those who stay behind." "No way I can make it back in time," Giordino said tautly. "Think of a better way?" Giordino shook his head in defeat. "Who gets the short end of the stick?" "The British survey team." Giordino stiffened. "No call for volunteers, not like you to leave a woman." "I have to place our own people first," Pitt answered coldly. Giordino shrugged, disapproval in his face. "We save them and then sign their death warrants." A long, shuddering vibration shook the seabed, chased by a deep, menacing rumble. 10 seconds. Pitt stared down at his wristwatch. The shock lasted 10 seconds. Then all was silent and still again, deathly silent. Giordino stared blankly for an instant into the eyes of his friend. Not the slightest fear showed. Pitt seemed incredibly indifferent. There was absolutely no doubt in his mind that Pitt was lying. There was never any intention to pilot the second sub. Pitt was set on being the last man out. It was too late now, too late for arguments, no time for drawn-out goodbyes. Pitt grabbed Giordino by the arm and half-pushed, half-heaved the tough little Italian through the hatch of the first submersible. "You should be just in time to greet the Admiral," he said. "Give him my best." Giordino didn't hear him. Pitt's voice was drowned out by falling rock that smashed against the dome and reverberated all around them. Then Pitt slammed the hatch shut and was gone. The 6 big men stuffed inside seemed to fill every square centimeter of the interior. They said nothing, avoiding each other's stares. Then, as if all eyes were following a thrown football in the last seconds of a game, they watched expectantly as Giordino weaved like an eel through their packed bodies into the pilot's seat. He swiftly switched on the electric motors that ran the submersible over rails into the airlock. He rushed through the checklist and had just programmed the computer when the massive interior door closed and water began surging through special restriction valves from the ice-cold sea outside. The instant the lock was filled and equalized with the immense water pressure, the computer automatically opened the exterior door. Then Giordino took over manual control, engaged the thrusters to maximum power, and drove the sub toward the waves far above. While Giordino and his passengers were in the lock, Pitt quickly turned his attention to the boarding of the second submersible. He ordered the Numa team women to enter first. Then he silently nodded for Stacy to follow. She hesitated at the hatch opening, shot him a strained, questioning look. She was standing quite still, as though stunned by what was happening around her.
"Are you going to die because I took your place?" she asked softly.
Pitt flashed a madcap smile. "Keep a date open for Rum Collins at sunset on the lanai of the Halekulani Hotel in Honolulu." She tried to form the words for a reply, but before they came out, the next man in line pushed her none too gently into the sub. Pitt stepped over to Dave Loudon, chief vehicle engineer on the project. About as perturbed as a clam, Loudon pulled up the zipper on his leather bomber jacket with one hand while pushing his rimless glasses up the bridge of his nose with the other.
"You want me to act as co-pilot?" Loudon asked in a low voice.
"No, you take her up alone," said Pitt. "I'll wait for Giordino to come back." Loudon could not control the saddened expression that crossed his face.
"Better I should stay than you.
You have a pretty wife and 3 kids. I'm single. Get your ass in that sub and be quick about it."
Pitt turned his back on Loudon and walked over to where Plunkett and Salazar were standing. Plunkett also showed no shred of fear. The big ocean engineer looked as content as a sheepherder casually eyeing his flock during a spring shower.
"Do you have a family, Doc?" Pitt asked.
Plunkett gave a slight shake of his head.
"Me? Not bloody likely. I'm an old confirmed bachelor."
"I thought as much." Salazar was nervously rubbing his hands together, a frightened light in his eyes. He was achingly aware of his helplessness and a certainty that he was about to die.
"I believe you said you had a wife?" Pitt asked, directing his question to Salazar.
"And a son," he muttered. "They're in Veracruz.
There's room for one more. Hurry and jump in."
"I'll make 8, Salazar said dumbly. "I thought your submersibles only held 7.
"I put the biggest men in the first sub and crammed the smallest and 3 ladies in the second. There should be enough space left over to squeeze in a little guy like you."
Without a thank you, Salazar scrambled into the submersible as Pitt swung the hatch cover closed against his heels. Then Loudon dogged it tight from the inside. As the submersible rolled into the airlock and the door closed with a sickening finality, Plunkett slapped Pitt's back with a great bear paw of a hand.
"You're a brave one, Mr. Pitt. No man could have played God better."
"Sorry, I couldn't find an extra seat for you."
"No matter. I consider it an honor to die in good company."
Pitt stared at Plunkett, mild surprise in his eyes.
"Who said anything about dying?"
"Come now, man, I know the sea. It doesn't take a seismographic genius to know your project is about to collapse around our ears."
"Doc," Pitt said conversationally through a heavy tremor, "trust me."
Plunkett gave Pitt a very skeptical look.
"You know something I don't?
Let's just say we're catching the last freight out of Soggy Acres." 12 minutes later, the shock waves came in an endless procession. Tons of rock cascaded down from the canyon walls, striking the rounded structures with shattering force. Finally, the battered walls of the undersea habitat imploded, and billions of liters of icy black water boiled down and swept away man's creation as completely as though it had never been built.